why is the activity moving from 1751 to 1751, and then they come to question this is not at the end of the presentation. Because we'll ask the question and then we'll go to the end of the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and the Honorable members present this morning. Perhaps even before I go any further, Chair, just to also indicate that even our presentation is going to seek to address the questions that were arising from our previous presentation in November. And those were followed up by a letter that came from the office for us to specifically address ourselves. At the same time, whilst I'm saying that, Honorable members, I'm also saying there could be other questions that may arise as a result of our presentation in an attempt to answer those questions. I think we are readily available to answer those questions. If the House will allow me, let me start by thanking the Honorable members for the invitation that was given to us as IDT, that we should be in a position to come back and respond to the questions that were posed and make an attempt to respond in depth to those questions as we are showing them there on the screen. And we are also committing to the fact that those matters that were raised in during November, as well as the matters that may arise as a result of our responses, there will be an endeavor on our side to make sure that we cover everything. Honorable members, let me also hasten to indicate that we did send through documents on Thursday last week as prescribed, but also indicate that as we were in the process of doing that, we suffered like everybody else to we had problems in terms of our electrical letters. I don't think we owed ESCOM by any chance, but there were technical issues. But we thought let's send out documents so that we were complying with the requirements of this office. So members would see that there is a repackaged documentation that has been made available for this morning, which is being circulated to the honorable members. And let me, on behalf of the delegation here, apologize profusely if there is any inconvenience that is going to be caused to the members because of most probably what might be seen to be a gap in the information that was given on Thursday and the additional information that is given today. Hence my earlier statement to say that we are readily available to make sure that that gap is easily closed. As I continue, therefore, in closing my remarks as opening here, would request the indulgence of this committee and its honorable members that you allow us then to go through the agenda. As we have indicated, it is already put up there on the screen, and that agenda will be seeking to set out how we were proposing to answer the questions as they were posed in the letter. We thought that, Honorable Chair and members, that if we started by giving an overview, the issue will be done by the CEO, and then I will follow with the pertinent questions that were asked around the remuneration matters by the committee, and then the other matters, quite obviously, as they are operational in nature, they will follow through as each member of the delegation is going to be dealing with. I've just mentioned the fact that we are talking of a delegation, and I think it would be a travesty if I didn't indicate who is here so that the committee members, when the members speak, they know who is speaking and why are they speaking. The next to me on my right, honorable members, is the CEO, Ms. Thembi Nwedamuzu. Most of you might have met her on a number of occasions when we were here to report. And on the extreme right there, we have Professor Fries. She's the executive in the CEO's office. To my left here, we have Ayanda Wakaba, who's the executive of and I'll say program, but it's called DPS, but it's the core business of the IDT, and over there is Ian Ellis, who's our CFO. And then at the back there, we have got, let me start right next to the door, we have Opa, who's our manager responsible for strategy, or part of the team that is assisting in the CEO together with the executives in that area. And then next to him, some of you might have met, we call her affectionately Sister. She's our parliamentary liaison officer assisting us in this area. And then next to her, we have got Bernard Nkomo. He advises the board on remuneration matters. So I thought let him accompany us this morning to be able to deal with technical issues. I think, and myself, Pumla Khadebe is the chair of the board. I think I've covered everybody here. So through you, Honorable Chair and members, this is how we thought we'd set it out. I don't know whether we can just shoot and do the presentation or just take comments in terms of the layout of what we're proposing for this morning.
Good morning, I'm Mary Madlala.
Morning, I'm Kumzile Ngwenya Mabila, the member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Doris Nguyen, member of
morning, I'm Winston Rabutapi, member of the committee.
Morning, I'm Lennox Gaylor.
To start with the first presentation and then we will take it from there. Thanks for us.
Honorable members, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee, good morning. As the Chairperson has already outlined our presentation, I'm going to start with the progress report in terms of the long-term sustainability plan of the IDT. To also indicate, Honorable Members, that this is one of the issues that was raised at our November meeting, which we will try and respond to, but also it is a briefing to the Portfolio Committee as part of our consultation processes. And we would then allow Honorable Members to interact and discuss this issue. I am starting, Honorable Members, with those wheels, which for us really present the elements that we are looking at when we are talking about the long-term sustainability of the IDT. And these, Honorable Members, look into the institutional integrity of the organization, that is in terms of our corporate governance issues, the relevance of mandates, whether the IDT's mandate is relevant to the current executive and the principles of government, and as well as the financial sustainability. You will then see, Honorable Members, that in as far as the financial sustainability, what is core in this presentation will also relate to those issues. As we were looking into those key elements, we have had to come up with the key assumptions in terms of what are we really referring to when we talk to these issues of a long-term financial sustainability of the organization. We are starting with the relevance, to say that as an organization, whilst we derive our mandate from the trust deed, it has also been our way of doing things, in particular, to realign continuously with the governing body in terms of the principles that is being pursued by government. So the relevance of mandate will then look into whether the IDT's programs are in line with the priorities that government has put in place. We're also moving forward to say, in 2005, our Board of Trustees made a decision to say that the IDT needs to focus more on people-centered development, and therefore we need to come up with the best practices and success stories for the poverty eradication. This was also part of pursuing the priorities that were put up by the executive at that time. In that context, we accepted that over a period of time, the capital base of the IDT will be eroded. Just a bit on that, honorable members, to say that as we employ the resources of the organization into poverty eradication type of programs, we were very much aware that we will then be depleting that capital base. But that was done consciously, that if the IDT has really made a dent or an impact in its pursuit of poverty eradication, government or the executive will definitely be able to recapitalize the IDT. We're also highlighting that we have gone through the DFI review, which I'm assuming members might have been aware of. This was a review that was conducted by the National Treasury, and it was looking into introspecting the different DFIs, the Development Finance Institutions. And also there could also be a bit of confusion in terms of whether IDT is a DFI. But in terms of the classification that Treasury was using, IDT was part of the DFI. We were happy to say that the outcome of that report has reported that the IDT is actually a development agency rather than a DFI. So we have gone through that process, and there is a report to that effect. We are also aware, honorable members, that as we do poverty eradication type of intervention, there is no way that we can be able to generate income. As you know, poverty eradication, and in particular our mandate, is focusing more on being redistributive rather than creating income or generating income to an extent of us being able to break even in the process of implementing our program. This slide, honorable members, is trying to show you the size of the organization, the turnover that we have been pursuing. You would realize that since 2000 to current 2010, we've actually implemented programs worth about 8.497 billion rand. That is what we have implemented to date. We're also showing on this slide, honorable members, that there has been a gradual increment on our turnover. So the organization has actually been growing. You will also see this as we talk to the overheads, the expenses of the organization, because as the organization turnover was growing, also the size of the organization from staff establishment also was growing. And that is indicated in a number of variables that we will be talking to as we move along. On this slide, we are showing the distribution of our program portfolio, and honorable members will realize that our biggest portfolio is on the school building, but we also have the poverty relief and the EPWP. We've got a justice portfolio. We've got health. There is a bit on food security, environmental intervention, welfare and sports facilities, the water facilities, the water sanitation, and as well as a little bit again on sports and culture. So this is the distribution of our program. In as far as a school is concerned, honorable members, without really taking you through what we've already presented to yourself, I'm aware that my colleague made a presentation here to yourself, including the math school presentation, but we're just highlighting our participation in that program. And you will realize that we have been able to participate up to an extent of about 2 billion rand with just general schools over that period, and with math schools to an extent of 873 million rand. But we do have a detailed report in our pack that, if required, we can be able to take honorable members through. In terms of the financial sustainability challenges, as I have indicated earlier briefly, that we have been applying our capital base in pursuit of our mandates as referred, and that the cost has escalated with the exponential growth in business. I've already indicated that as our turnover was growing, equally our expenses were also growing. The growth in portfolio, as you have seen in the previous slides, I can say that we've actually had about 50% increase in the IDT's portfolio to date, if you look into the figures that we've already presented to yourself. We had also projected that our capital base will be depleted in the current rate of growth that we've been experiencing. And that is part of what we will be putting forward to yourself, because I think we are at that stage where the capital base of the IDT is being depleted and we are now bidding for the recapitalization of the organization. The IDT's revenue-generating capacity as well, I think it's a matter that we would want to put forward to yourself, because we were unable to get adequate interest because our capital base was already diminishing. So the base on which we were getting interest was already lower. At the same time, there has been a huge decrease on interest rates, which affect the IDC's ability to generate income from the capital base. We're further talking to the issues relating to the financial sustainability challenges, and the fact that when we were presenting to our minister, we decided to split the financial sustainability issues into two, the immediate and the short term, which we thought would be able to address the current issues of the going concern of the IDT. And I'm happy to say that we have been afforded 150 million by Treasury. We had initially submitted a request for 200 million. So in terms of the current grant that we have, there is that shortfall. On a long-term basis, honorable members, we're putting forward to yourselves that we've got a program that we're currently pursuing, and this program, we want it to have been finalized timely so that we can be able to put our bids to Treasury for the long-term sustainability of the IDT. And this is part of the model that we will be putting forward to yourself, because we are quite conscious of the fact that Treasury, the executive authority, and government at large has put up some issues for us to relook into as an organization. Hence, we are now talking about the transformation of the organization so that we are well positioned to respond to some of the issues that were raised in all the reports or the reviews that have been undertaken. I have covered most of this issue. We're now giving you the update in terms of where we are, and we can report that by the 13th of February 2011, most of those outputs that have been that we have put in there were actually 99% achieved at that level. So we have been able to go through most of those issues, and we've presented to the various platforms. And I think right now we'll also be highlighting to yourselves what is outstanding and what we have planned to achieve. The journey ahead as of 13th February is what we're outlining here, honorable members, maybe just to highlight to yourselves that we need to have concluded our business case by the 15th of June at least, so that we can be able to put it forward to Treasury and have consulted with the various stakeholders, so that at least by the midterm review budget there is some consideration from the executive on the long-term sustainability of the organization. These are part of the journey ahead, the elements that we need to have covered, including cabinet approval, a cabinet a memo, including a legislation that will have to be drafted. And just to go back a bit, to indicate that the IDT's transformation process does have a legislation requirement, because the IDT will need to be enacted differently from the trust deed that we are currently operating under. And that will require a lot of support from the members, and I'm just emphasizing that, because that is one deliverable that we will be relying a lot on the guidance of honorable members. Okay. Maybe just to conclude on that, honorable members, to say that once more we are confirming that our mandate, the strategic vision, is directly aligned to the several social policy priorities of government, i.e. the creation of decent work and sustainable livelihoods, the massive program to build economic and social infrastructure, the implementation of a comprehensive rural development strategy linked to the land reform and food security, the strengthening of the skills and human resource base, and building of cohesive, caring, and sustainable communities. We're also saying that we still think that the IDT is well positioned as a vehicle for the service delivery value chain, particularly in terms of the long-term comprehensive poverty eradication strategy. And you will see, as we indicate our model, that our model is really located towards moving to community development. And we are, whilst we are maintaining our social infrastructure mandate, but we are also saying that we want to look into a much more comprehensive model that will include not just the brick and mortar, but the community development elements of the IDT's deliverables.
Honourable Chair, not this particular one. We're moving to the next point that we had. Thank you. The next question that was asked, which I will handle before I hand back to the CEO and her team, was the issue around board remuneration matters. And the first one that I would like to deal with is board remuneration. And I thought that I do know that all the honourable members are aware of what I'm going to be saying, but I thought it would also assist us to, you know, re-mention it to give a context to what we will be talking about. Members would remember that the IDT is a Schedule 2 entity that is governed by the PFMA and is audited by the Auditor General. We are operating under a trust that is registered with the Master of the High Court, and we are compliant with the Trust Properties Control Act. We, as a Board of Trustees, derive our mandate from the deed of trust. Oh, sorry, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Okay, thank you. My apologies for where we've written this derived from the deed of the supposed to be a deed of trust deed. Our apologies for that. And we're also indicating that board appointments are done and are approved by the executive authority in consultation with the cabinet. The board committees that we have, as well as their purpose and structure, are governed by the board charter, and they are directly linked to their terms of reference for the different committees, and we have an envelope of delegation of authority where there's a clear separation of the functions that are retained by the board and those that are then delegated to the CEO for the management to undertake. And then I thought it was necessary for us to mention the fact that we conduct board assessments periodically, and which assessments do assist us as a Board of Trustees to determine the different training needs for trustees. This is over and above any form of induction that would be taking place. There was questions raised at the last meeting pertaining to the benchmarking that we were talking about at that particular time, and we thought that most probably it's important that we also locate it within a policy context to say that pre-2007, when I speak to the previous fee structure, was based on an hourly rate, and from an administrative point of view, it was found that it was difficult to administer. And then during 2007, towards the end of the year, we had a simplified fee structure that was introduced, and this was purely based on a base fee and a fee paid for board meetings attended, as well as committee meetings that have been attended. And members would recall was being shown. And this particular fee structure was then approved by the executive authority. I think it was during February of 2008, and that has been utilized until now. But it is important to also indicate that what informed that structure at that particular time was within the context of looking at a market fee composition as a guideline, and those fees were pegged at a market median. When we spoke of benchmarking, we were looking at what similar fees were paid by similar entities of government of the same size, as well as the same business model that are similar to the IDT. And, you know, generally speaking, the CPI is used to input on the adjustment of fees. But I'm sitting here and I'm indicating that since 2008, beginning of the year, there has not been any fee increases for Board of Trustees during the 2009, 2010, and currently 2011. And there are a number of reasons why that has not been happening. One of them being the recapitalization of the organization. Board members thought that it would rather concentrate on looking at where the organization is going than to be looking at how we are remunerated as a board. But we're also saying within the context of looking at the new IGT, if I were to use that term, if the honorable members would allow me to, there might be a need then as part of this exercise of the new IGT to do another relevant market benchmarking study during 2011. And we are also saying that we would review the corporate entities or companies of similar size and SOEs that are similar to the IDT. And this would also be within the context of the current documentation that we have on the table, and I'm making reference to the presidential as well as the treasury overview that is currently being undertaken, just to make sure that what we are doing at the IDT and have been doing is within the governance structures that are dictated to by the documents of government. And we're also using the King Code, King 3 Board Code of Good Practice to ensure that we are also within the dictates. Particularly, this is of interest, mostly that the new Act, the Companies Act, is going to be implemented from the 1st of April. So into the future, not that the IDT has not been doing it, but particularly that the new Act is not going to allow a trust to occur. So the new IDT needs to be looking at a different form of what the IDT is going to be, what type of animal, because it cannot be a trust anymore, because the new Act is not going to permit that. And we continue to be saying here, honorable members, that for good practice, the IDT needs to continue to be committed to the fact that, you know, its effectiveness has to be measured as a board from time to time, and we need to be benchmarking ourselves to similar organizations in terms of measuring our performance and make sure that we remain relevant at all times. Still on the same leg, if we speak to executive remuneration, there are points that are indicative of governance within that. And I'm saying here this morning that when it, insofar as the CEO's appointment is concerned, the board appoints the CEO in consultation with the executive authority, and cabinet endorses the appointment, which has been the practice in the past up to date with the current CEO that we have. And we are also saying here that then the appointment of the executives who are the direct reports of the CEO, she appoints them, but she does it in consultation with the board. And then insofar as the organizational design and structure, which are things that at some stage, as indicated, are those which would be presented to the committee, taking the IDT forward, we work on the basis where the CEO proposes and the board approves the designs as well as the structure. When it comes to the remuneration philosophy and the guiding principles that we use, the starting point is to say that as a board, we support the corporate strategy that seeks to attract and retain a cadre of competent and skilled development practitioners, given the environment within which we work. And the policy that we have on the table then enables us as an organization to be able to compete for scarce skills out there. Inevitably, we do find ourselves in a number of occasions, even up to this stage, particularly as we go through transition, where we find that a lot of our competent and professionals get poached by similar organizations or even government itself. But we continue to make sure that our policy is the one that remains attractive enough to make sure that we retain and we can compete and, if possible, even poach ourselves where possible. And I'm also saying this morning that then, therefore, our remuneration, which then comprises of both the guaranteed and the incentivized pay, is market-related. Without repeating myself in what I said earlier, I think it is also critical because it's a matter that was raised by the committee at the last time to say what did we mean by market-related. And we're confirming this morning what we had said earlier, that we're talking of similar size, a similar mandate, and similar business model of entities of government and other SOEs. And within the IDT, therefore, there's a differentiation according to seniority or post levels. And we're saying here, therefore, that when we talk of this both guaranteed and incentivized pay, we're making reference to the fact that guaranteed pay is based on job description, which posts are evaluated and graded against similar positions within the market within which we operate, and the incentivized pay is based on performance against the agreements that the various officials enter into or managers enter into that are informed by our corporate plan and where we impose stretch targets. And this corporate plan, the corporate plan that you're making reference to, is the one that for the new financial year, very soon we will be presenting to the honorable members for them to approve and take us into the future. We continue to use the CPI as a guideline measure for determining our annual remuneration increases. I will be indicating on a slide just to give members an idea to see how we have been moving in the past to date. And let me hasten to stress the fact that the remuneration costs are managed within our budget constraints that we have currently. Allow me then, honorable members, to speak to the guaranteed pay policy because we're talking in a very generic way in the previous slide. We're saying here guaranteed pay is offered as a total cost to company, 250 package, and it is structured to include the cash portion, contributions to medical aid, retirement fund, car allowance, and other, there are those, you know, compulsory contributions that members have to be seen to be paying. So it's covered under the total cost to company. And the survey or the benchmarking survey of similar organizations, the last one that we did was in 2007, and this is where we have been. We haven't undertaken any other up to this date. But at that particular time, when we were doing the approvals, the remuneration was benchmarked at a market 50th percentile, which is, I think, the general trend within government entities. But at the IDT, then at that particular time, we had said, if you remember what I had indicated earlier, that we needed to be sure that we attract, and we included that 5% to be in line with a strategy that we had, which is still in our books, that speaks of the lead and the leg. Perhaps just to speak a little bit to that, to say, we found at that particular time in 2007 that when we're talking salaries and we're comparing ourselves to the IDCs, the DBSA, the KUHAs of the world, which are similar to us, we found that we're always 5% behind in terms of where they stood at that time. So the board then decided at that time that as we take people in, we will make sure that we accept that we are lagging behind and we can cover that by introducing a 5%. And then at a later stage, as the months pass by, depending on financial constraints, we would look at a possibility of introducing another 5% to make sure that we are in the lead. But let me be confident to say we stood at a lagging level, more than a leading level at that stage. So we are in a lagging 5% as compared to the others. I have indicated allow me to repeat, honorable members, to say CPI is used as a guideline measure for determining our annual remuneration increases. Let me give the honorable members the confidence that currently our books are indicating, and I can say it here, and members could verify that with us, that all this is currently informed by the qualifications, the experience, and the competency that we have of our current executives. We're talking here of the fact that we're sitting with executives who have got experience in the development sector ranging from 3 to 10 years, and the fact that insofar as academic qualifications, which we do make a requirement and very fussy about it, to say confidently that 8 of the 9 top senior managers that we have, they at least hold a minimum of 1 master's degree, which puts us in the state that we should be able to be providing the necessary theoretical basis of what we talk to as a development agency. The next slide, honorable members, is seeking just to indicate to yourself where we are on a comparative basis, and we're analyzing the trends. To say, for instance, in 2008-2009, when the CPI was at 11.5, the increase that we gave to the executives was at 11%, and the percentage that we gave to our staff who are in the bargaining council was also at 11. And then came 2009 and 11, the CPI was standing at 7.1, and the envelope that the board decided on to give to the CEO to work within, it started by, you know, giving the 10% that was negotiated by our staff who are in the bargaining chamber, and it left only 3.9 for the executives. And then in 2010 and 11, we had a CPI that was standing at 4.3, and once again we gave them an envelope within which to work, and it resulted in that a negotiated settlement with the bargaining staff was that those between the levels of 6 and to 7 got 6%, and those on level 8 to 10 got 7%, and then the executives only received 8. I'm recalling here, honorable members, that one of the debates during the board meeting was a sense of comfort that was saying at any given time we needed to recognize the fact that the percentages that are given to our staff at a lower level at any given time, although we know that when they translate to the actual figures, it may not be the same, but there has to be a concerted effort that we try, that the percentages that we gave to our lower staff members were slightly higher. We are saying here, honorable members, this morning that we are hoping that the business reorganization plan that is on the table will be able to inform new executive roles and also begin to speak to how then the benchmark exercise we'll be doing would also indicate as to where do we put them in terms of salaries at that particular time. Repeating myself, therefore, I'm saying the last time that we did was in 2007, and we have not done any, also in due consideration of the financial position of the IDT. And I'm also saying here that when we do that benchmarking exercise, we'll be reviewing comparator companies that are similar to us within the government sphere of operation. And we are hoping that budget adjustments for market remuneration anomalies would be undertaken at that time. One of the questions that has been posed to us is to give an overview as to how we work on performance bonuses. And one thought that it would be therefore important to just give a policy rationale as to what informs our discussions and our resolutions when we look at performance payments of performance incentives. The IDT as an organization, because of the nature of the work that it does, we ensure, and the CEO continuously ensures, that we engender within the organization a culture of performance, and we ensure that we differentiate and reward exceptional performance. A case in point, which I could mention if members honorable members will allow me, was there was a stage when a document came to the board to say, you know, we don't think we'll be able to pay bonuses this year, even if, you know, we're not even looking at figures. But the debate lended itself to the fact that then it would be a way of discouraging those employees who were exceptional in their performance. Even if the incentivized pay could be minimal, but let us show the intention that we would like to encourage a culture of performance and also excellence within the organization. We continue to ensure that we raise the performance bar, and we manage mediocre performance, and we manage it in different ways, where mediocre performance or poor performance cannot even be helped. We insist on a system that if people cannot be helped, we politely ensure that they allow room for new energy to come in, and those who can still be helped are definitely helped to ameliorate their performance so that they could meet expectations. And we ensure that within this environment, we prioritize and focus on business energy, the energy that would ensure that as an entity, we continue to perform above expectation. And we're saying this policy assists with the management of critical skills and talents that we need as an organization and that we need to retain. I thought, honorable members, and through you, Chair, that it is important that we brought in the sentence to say staff members at the ITT are aware of the fact that performance bonuses are not guaranteed, and they are only paid at the discretion of the board, which means that at the time when it is the time to, you know, performance can be managed, but once that has been done and we've gone through some of the processes that would indicate in the ensuing slides, then the board sits and make a decision that are we able to pay bonuses, and then, you know, we declare that we're in a position to pay bonuses, and then we begin to pay, but within a set envelope, which may not necessarily be equivalent to what the percentages would be indicating of the staff members. So it's not a given at the ITT that staff members would receive bonuses, but we have to talk around that. The policy design and structure of our performance management is based on a three-tier performance approach. The board approves the corporate plan, which, like I indicated, we bring to yourself for approval, which informs the design of the business unit targets and individual targets. And then we also say that the performance bonus system is applicable to all employees, and these three-tiered performance targets are then cascaded and weighted according to the ITT hierarchy of responsibilities, as we indicate. For instance, if we've depicted an example of what we're talking about here, that the CEO, at the level where she is, as the head of the organization, you see that there is more emphasis on a measurement at a corporate level, and there's 20% on an individual basis, and there's a zero there. The total would remain 80. Let me hasten to go to other employees down there at the bottom, where you find that we concentrate more on their side, on their individual performance, which is 70%, and then unit is 20, and there's much less on the corporate level. It indicates the level of responsibilities, where the CEO carries more responsibility at a corporate level, not undermining the individual contribution that she's making to the organization. But at the end of the day, the total weight of all the different levels that you've indicated of our employees has to give us a 100% that is indicated there. As I move on, honorable members, I'm indicating therefore here to say if we talk about the payout percentages, we are saying that individual performance scores on achievement of targets vary from 1 to 5, and somewhere it would indicate at the next slide what we mean by 1 and what do we mean by 5. But there is a principle within the organization that says that for anyone who comes and gets a 3.3, it means that you've done what you've been employed for, thank you, and we don't pay bonuses to anyone who receives a 3 or anyone who is below 3. But the minute an employee starts moving from 3.1 upwards, then we are saying you are eligible to participate in the payment of bonuses. And the board approved over a period of time a sliding scale for performance bonuses, as is indicated in this next slide. I've said we speak of a 1 to 5, where 1 is indicative of the fact that the employee during the year that would be under review at that time has had a nil performance and there's no bonus whatsoever. Whereas if it's a 5, it means that the employee has been very effective in their performance. So the table here, there are 6 to indicate that, for instance, let me speak to from 3.1 when we start paying out bonuses to say, for instance, using the CEO, once again as an example here, to say if she gets a rating of 3.1 in the scale, then she's entitled to 15%. But if she performs at being extremely effective and gets a 5, we pay out 45%. If you go down to, I'm using once again, the level of other employees there at the bottom, to say if an employee performs at 3.1 and is eligible to participate in the payment of bonuses, that employee would receive an 8%, and then if the employee is at 5%, there is 25% to be paid. So there is a scale that we utilize how we differentiate in the payment of percentages and bonuses that we have indicated. I thought that this would be of interest to the Honorable Committee, just to give you an idea of what other entities have been looking at. If you remember, I had indicated that at level 3 for us, or 3.1, we would pay our CEO. We've used an example of the CEO here. We would pay 15% bonus. Entity 1, the colleagues, the honorable members will allow me that we've just said entity, but we have got specific information as to which are these entities within government. But we thought that we'd leave it at that, and we would give the information if so necessary. Where at level 3, where we pay 15%, entity 1 gives 80%, and entity 2 gives 50%, and entity 3 gives 260% of the salary. And then it also indicates in terms of managers, where in our instance, where we would give a manager, for example, 3.1, 10%, the entity 1 gives 40%, and entity 2 varies from between 40 and 35%, and entity 3 gives 130%. And we're comparing apples to apples in this particular instance. And then the next slide, there's a slide, madam. Yes, I think that's the one. Yeah, my last slide, if you could show that. I thought here it would then assist, just to give an indication that in the year 2010, where, for instance, the CEO had an individual score of 4.4, the unit score, you remember we said we do not measure her on that, and on the corporate score she had a 3.9, and that translated into a total weighted score of 4.2, and then she got a percentage of 36%. And we deliberately requested that let them indicate all the executives, where also, for instance, Mr. Wakaba was sitting next to me here, got a 4.2 on individual score. For unit, he got a 4.2. On the corporate score, he got a 3.9, which translates on to 4.1, and the percentage is 28%. So honorable members, the attempt here, as requested, was to give yourself a policy overview of how the details of how we work on our performance bonuses, how we reach the figures that we have, what is the rationale behind it, how is it calculated, as well as the rationale in terms of the salaries that we give our executive, as well as the rationale of the base fees that are given to board members. And I'm trusting that we have managed to cover, but we are here to take further questions, if any, from the honourable members. Honourable Chair and the members, if then you would allow us, I would hand over to the CEO to continue with the next point on our agenda. Thanks a lot. With your indulgence, Honourable Chair, one of the questions that was asked on this remuneration, my apologies for that oversight, there was a question that was asked on the function of the executive in the CEO's office. My apologies that I didn't mention that. I'll ask the CEO to respond to that because it's within her function. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. I also thought, Honourable Members, we should sort of give a context of the Office of the CEO and the functions that sit in that office rather than just zooming into the question that was asked. And I'm starting by indicating that the new IDT or the transformed IDT will be recognized as the leading development agency that makes a difference where it matters most. And this is where we are positioning the future IDT that is currently going through a process of transformation. I'm also mentioning that I am responsible and accountable for the total IDT business enterprise. And that includes the financial management and oversight, which is delegated to the CFO by the PFMA, and other functions to executive heads by the CEO. And therefore, what is the role of the CEO's office? I'm saying that all staff, irrespective of rank, understand and are able to unambiguously and consistently champion an inspirational vision, a unit that leads. And this is part of the culture that I'm creating in the Office of the CEO. The unit leads by example, without exception, and delivers the core business of the unit. It's also to support the CEO with oversight for delegated functions. I'm now talking to the responsibilities of the executive head in the Office of the CEO, and I'm saying that it is delegated to take responsibility for and provide strategic advice and support, which positions the CEO to lead, and these are the components that are led in that respect. One is the corporate strategy development, which requires ongoing research, interpretation of data, and meaning-making, which is the significance to the IDT strategic planning. That really refers to, for example, the environmental scan. We had not necessarily printed, we didn't know whether you need the detail of that we're talking to it, but we can make copies to that effect, Chairperson.
And several of this is clear, but I'm not telling you to say you must understand I was prepared. In your standing in presentation, there were a lot of different that were coming in. And I want to indicate that was not acceptable because you were confusing us by a lot of different things that were coming in. I mean, listen, you knew quite well that we expected to come in with this presentation. And some of the excuses that are coming in, to me, they are not as accepted because we knew quite long that we expected to come in with this presentation. I don't know. Honorable Member, could they continue with this presentation with that question? Because I wanted us to engage on the issues that members raised with me. I was not there in the last meeting. That's why I wanted members to engage on the last presentation that they had so that they can get answers from if they have a question. Can we agree on that? Let's continue. Let's engage.
No, thank you very much from the chair of the IDT for the trustees, although the future, whether they will be trustees or what in the future, according to her presentation. Thank you very much. It assists us to understand how does these institutions work and its mandate. Yeah, I want to first concur with the chairperson. Say that maybe the members are not asking the question because, you know, it's a new document and we're reading the other document and to refer on the other one, in particular the first one, but the chair said we must start with this one for remuneration matters, report on remuneration matters. But, Chair, I want to really concur with the Chair that in future really we request that the documents that the documents that are given to us are the same with the one that the institution is going to present before us, so that when we raise questions on it, we know exactly that we are reading the relevant document rather than now, you know, we see we are talking here, is that which document? Because we got other documents. But nevertheless, thank you very much for the presentation. I want to check, the chairperson has presented the salaries, the salary in particular of the CEO and the executives indicating that their salaries are based on the benchmarking of the other institutions that are of similar size. But I'm not sure around the issue of sizes, whether it's the only factor that determines the benchmarking of the IDT, the size of that institution. I'm saying that, Chair, because payment of the executives are being benchmarked with other institutions of similar size, but I don't hear the issue of affordability to say that even if it's of your similar size, but do you really afford as an institution, after we have received a presentation by the CEO indicating that we are not profit-driven, we are only distributing, and also lowering of your capital is a challenge within the institution. I'm not sure, Chairperson, maybe the Chair will clarify to say that while benchmarking, but do they look at the issue of affordability? Because you can't just look at benchmarking and they are saying you are of a similar size, but you don't consider the affordability of your own institution, whether you can you can match the other institution you are benchmarking with. Also, Chair, I would like to check what is the percentage of the salaries in the IDT as opposed to their operational budget and the percentage of the total salary, and what guides it, if it's that particular percentage. The other thing, what is the size of the IDT? Because the chairperson talk about the size, to say this is the factor that drives them to merge with the other institution, so that we are clear as a committee that what is the size of the institution, IDT. Also, I was looking at the increment of the salaries, also the performance contract. I'm not sure, because now the chair talks about the performance contract to say that they signed the contract, but unfortunately we did not see the contract to know exactly what is it that is entailed on the contract. Maybe we did not ask for it. Maybe it was going to assist us to look at the actual contract, what is there on the contract. And following on that, chair, around the issue of the performance, is the issue of the performance. I hear the chair talking about 3.1. When you're talking about 3.1, I'm looking at the performance contract to say that if you talk to a layman like us in this committee, what is the percentage of achievement if it is 100%? Maybe like to say we have a contract of 100%, but the incumbent has achieved maybe 60% or 80%. I'm saying that, Honorable Chair, because the issue of the performance, maybe sometimes other people, they say, no, 80% we have achieved. But when you employ a person, you employ a person to achieve 100%. To me, the performance is when you have gone beyond the duty of call. Is it what is happening there in IDT? That is my question on this one. Also, around the issue of the salaries, I've been looking at the levels, you know, Chair. You'll forgive me, Chair. I'm not, a fundi on these things of the contract, performance and so on. But I'm just looking at it. There has been a debate around the issue of the salary caps. Even if you look at, there was a time that was 11% across the board, because in the bargaining council, that's what they have achieved. Usually, what is achieved in the bargaining council, it's not what the executive is going to get, because we are trying to lower that gap between different levels, and it has been on the debate. But I want to check, Madam Chair, whether is there any provision or thinking around the issue of breaching or lowering the gaps between the salaries, because even if you look at the bonuses, it's always, my understanding is that the manager or the accounting officer is a person who achieves its her or his objective through other people. If other people did not achieve, it becomes to me as a layman to say, how do a person that achieves some of his or her task through other people below get more than the other people below? It's just something, because in South Africa, this is the debate, and we are coming from the recession, Madam Chair. I did not see in some of the institutions of the similar kind or government institution, some of the senior managers declared. I will make an example with UMSA too, that there was a municipal manager who sat down with his own executive managers and say, the situation here is that we are having a challenge around the issue of collecting revenue. Because of that, now we are saying all of us, we are not going to get a bonus. And they declared that, because their interest, as the CEO was correctly presenting, is to say they are focusing on service delivery, on developmentally. They are not DFI, as they were saying. I think it was the chair to say that there is that one, developmental, looking at service delivery more than what we are getting. So I will just ask those questions and stop there, Chair, because maybe some of the answers will assist me to learn on those particular things. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Honorable Gayla? I'm sure
you have
captured all the questions.
Chairperson, there's not much I'm going to say. Whatever I'm going to say, that we've
receive the answers to our questions, and we need to check with if the answers that we received are true. For instance, the benchmarking issue with other entities, IDC and all that, you know. What we are concerned about was that the CEO last term received over 600,000 bonus. The CEO received 3.2 million, more than the president of the country. I think that was a question from Honorable Magama. And we started, you know, getting worried. What is happening? Because IDT was last funded in 1990, 2 billion. And IDT is seeking funds, it does not have any funds at all. So we got worried about that. I don't think we're so much worried about the board, but then also in the CEO's office, you have an executive who's earning close to 1.6, 1.8 million, which then comes about close to 5, 6 million within the CEO's the office, which the executives are earning. But having received these answers, I think we, as a committee, we need to sit down and, you know, we just received these documents now, and we can, you know, there's nothing much we can get out of these documents. Benchmarking with which entity? If you say IDC, IDC is financially viable, but not IDT. So I think we need to sit down and discuss this as a committee and make more research. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Nguyen.
No, I'm covered by the salary of the CEO exceeding that one of the president of the country and other CEOs in this that report to Public Works. Thanks.
Thank you. Wanya Marino.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by thanking the department for the presentation that has been made to the committee. Chairperson, I've just got a few questions to raise. On this document, on page 6 of 8, we were told that the legal fees that were incurred by the department were due to the late or non-payment by client's department. What I wanted to find out is that which steps have been taken by the IDT to ensure that this doesn't happen again, because there's a lot of money that has been spent on legal and litigation. Then the other one, Chair, is on page where it talks about the schools, the number of schools and scope of departments. It's unfortunate that there are no pages in some of, there are no numbers in some of the pages. When looking at the heading, it indicates that the list of schools built by IDT in 2008 2009 financial year. Then there were list of schools. At the last column is comments, which indicate the scope of work that has been done by IDT. But the last page, Chair, under comments, there's no scope of work. I think it's under Mpumalanga. There's no scope of work. Secondly, okay, I can see now. There's no indication of the scope of work that has been done. There's only the name of the school, the municipality under which the schools are, and also the amount. But it's not clear what is it that has been done.
Are you not moving too fast?
I name them, my documents. It's okay.
We are not yet there.
Okay.
How are you, Patty? That's how we party. Keep on understanding the
comment.
You have to deal with the presentation, and then we'll move to the next.
Okay. Mine is on the concluding remarks about the implementation of a comprehensive rural development strategy. My question is, how many unskilled laborers have been developed under this comprehensive development strategy, especially in rural areas? Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson, don't you as IDT view yourself as an extension of government? I'm asking this question because in 1990, you did receive $2 billion from government, and the mandate was very clear for you to implement on behalf of government. Can you please, because I'm asking this question, because if you view yourself an extension of government, your salary package, especially of the CEO, may not, I would understand it to be of the same with the DGs. If you view yourself as an extension of government, because that's how I see you, and I don't know. Can you please respond to that?
Chair, on what has been presented with regards to this remuneration, I think it will assist us if IDT can give us a specific figure, because you know this issue of the percentages is sometimes confusing, because if they are saying 11.5%, 11.5% of what? So if maybe specific figures can be just given to us so that we can be able to analyze.
CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We, like I said earlier to you as the Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members, for this opportunity to respond to the questions asked. We'll be requesting the team members to assist with some of the operational, for instance, figures that they might have. The Honourable Member had asked a question, Chair, through you, that when we do a comparator exercise, we're looking on the exercise. There is a slide where I had made reference that size is one of the criteria. We look at the mandate. We look at the different business models. But I think the most critical point that she asked was whether it's size or model or whatever. What about affordability? That I think that was the crux of the question that would be asked. For me, this is where also colleagues would assist me in responding to this particular one. To say, for me, it starts with the history of the IDT, as the Honourable Chair was asking recently, that when the IDT was established and a path was given to the IDT at that particular time, the mandate was very clear, and it has evolved over a period of time, the mandate that the IDT has had. But there is something that has always remained similar, which is about community development. And I didn't think there was a stage where we were expected to be an organization that looks at the bottom line. For instance, being a Schedule 2 entity, the Auditor General is here and would disagree with this if I was saying it, if it's wrong. To say, for instance, other Schedule 2 entities would be the DBSA, SAA, Post Office, and the like. Like they say, they look at corporate good. And the corporate good that is given, given to the different organizations is not the same. They look at the bottom line, but ours was more of public good. The development of the public or the development of the community
and we do it through government programs. Hence your question, Madam Chair, that says, are you not an extension of government? Yes, we are implementing government projects. We are representing government. It would be folly for us to think that we are detached from government. We derive our programs from the dictates of what government is saying. So we would go into the details of the salaries that are higher. Affordability, I would ask Ian to begin to crunch and give us a ballpark of what we're talking about, and particularly in terms of the percentage of our salary budget versus our operational budget, and what guides this percentage. And as well as, I think he might have the figures in terms of giving us the numbers of staff and how we separate those who are contract workers and those who are fixed workers. The performance contract, the question that was asked by the
honourable... Before proceeding, you partly answered my question, but why don't you complete the salary there?
As to why is it higher?
Yeah.
And then what I wanted to find out was, it's a bit I didn't have time to serve, as to where does the DC stand?
Yes, in Sunday's City Press, there were salaries of certain DGs there. They stand at 1.47, 1.43, 1.22. That's where the whole thing. The highest was about 1.37, if not 3.4. There.
Okay, Chair, thanks for the Chair. The Honourable Chair has helped me. I didn't see that particular article. I think the difference for me, when I interpret in terms of what we look at as a board, would be if there's a slide where I spoke to total cost to company. When we talk of total cost to company, in our case, we'd say if, for instance, we give the CEO 1.6 million, in that 1.6, it's inclusive of everything else that then gets deducted at the end of the day. Ian would help me as to how we break it. So out of that, she gets that envelope. And out of that envelope, it is inclusive of everything else. Whereas that 1.3, if my understanding is correct, I'm saying this subject to correction, Honorable Chair, is that's the cash portion of ADG. That's the cash portion. If you remember the slide which I indicated, I said our guaranteed pay speaks to a cash portion, and then the other things that are within that portion that has been indicated. So for us, it's a total package. Whereas the other one, I'm not sure whether it includes the total package or they are only speaking to the cash portion. I'm subject to correction as to how it's calculated. I'm not in a position to answer for that. Madam CEO, you'll assist us on the authenticity of information, which I think is something that has been indicated. We do have this on file. For instance, when we were doing a comparator exercise, at that particular time in 2007, we were assisted by Deloitte. And when Deloitte brought back the results, we were working on information. For instance, the figures that I was giving there of 206 and the 200 and others was indicative of other entities of government, and we had to get that information from those entities. But the information is available. I'm talking now on the authenticity of the information that we have given here. And I would want to believe that it would be folly of us, to the honorable members, to come and lie to the portfolio committee, because we will be caught out if we lie. And I think it's only fair that we gave the true reflection of what we have in our books, because then it also gets audited in our books. But we always are open in checking the authenticity of the information that we're giving to the honorable members this morning. But there was information that was derived from the different entities, as well as information that came from ourselves. May I request that Ian starts responding to some, then the CEO will fill in and then, put in whatever is missing in this instance.
Before proceeding, you know,
yes, ma'am.
You know what, ma'am? I know it's not human for us to discuss the CEO's salary in her presence. That's not human. And I don't know whether you will accept me before system to excuse us for 5-10 minutes so that we discuss this issue. Because, you know, you are not too transparent to us. System B. Yeah, please. Because it's not human, you know. It's not.
Honorable Church, through indulgence, would the figures that he has to give us help in terms of the percentage of our salary bill versus operations so that we can get it in a total picture type of thing? Or
yes, thanks, Daddy. You know, I agree with you, Madam Chair, to say that the executives must go out. Really, it can't be correct to discuss the issues of the CEO in their presence.
Yeah.
So they have to go out. But also the one that will present figures, we present figures and then leave, and then we discuss. Because we can't, this thing, a person that reports to you here what this thing discussed is not correct.
Yeah. Please, system.
Honourable Chair, can I then give the overall numbers and then
before proceeding, Honourable members, let's agree. Can we agree? You see, if we have checked the city press of this week, the package is there with 1 comma something, 1 comma something, and after deductions of everything, those people is either they remain with 80,000, 90,000, or 70,000. You understand? So the explanation that you are giving us, it's not correct. Because what is their take-home? Take-home, the one that you get into here. We don't want we want you not to say, you are saying, it's because what is included. But you must be specific. Because if the salary is 3 comma something million, per year, it's more than the president of the country. And there's no way that you can say you have benchmarked yourself with other entities. You can't benchmark yourself with, for instance, Transnet. How big is your entity? And how can you benchmark yourself? How can you get a salary more than the person who's funding you? It's not understandable. Honourable members, can we?
Chairperson, to add there, those salaries in the city press were inclusive of everything.
Mm.
They were inclusive. And really, as you say, Chairperson, you cannot go benchmark yourself with TBSA and SAE. They are viable. Suppose you have no money, you don't have any money. So you cannot go benchmark yourself with the SAA, DBSA, and post office.
Dr. Matope?
Yes. No, I think the chair of the IDP did indicate that he's not sure about the salaries of the others. You know, she can't comment on that. But we want to tell her, as the honorable chair and the colleague has said, you know, even that time, you know, the other entities that report to us as parliament, like CIDP, you know, they were getting a total package of 1.1 million. It's only, and then also the Council for Built Environment, they were 937. And then when it comes to IDT, it was 3.067. The total package, including the salary, the travel allowance, as well as the performance bonus. And it really is unacceptable to us as a committee. It's really unacceptable. And when you look at the
the DGs for the parliament also. It's inclusive what was outside there. It's inclusive. It's only this entity that is very high, which caused a concern to us as members. Thanks.
Are you on? Can the chairperson respond? Who's going to respond?
Honourable Chair, let me try and respond. As far as the actual comparisons are concerned, I know that as far as IDT itself is concerned, we've attempted to look at other SREs. We've looked at the ones that have been mentioned before. We've looked at TCTA, for instance. We've looked at NDA. I think the difficulty that we've experienced is to find an entity that is similar in size, in impact, and basically in the skills that this entity has. And whilst I understand your concerns about measuring total cost, I think the only way of comparing salaries meaningfully is to look at the total cost to company of those individuals. A whole host of things can impact on the take-home pay, the net pay as such. And I think it needs to be a total cost to company level. What the total cost of those DGs is concerned, we have not had a chance to unpack those numbers, and I'm sure that exercise can be done relatively quickly. As far as the percentage that salaries constitutes of total cost, if one looks at the average over the last 3 years, it's averaged around about 55% of total cost. Now, 55% might seem quite high. I think what is critical is that the IDT sells skills, and I think one needs to look at it in context of salary costs versus total costs.
I know.
If I can then look at the total number of employees, we stabilized at around about 410 to 415 contract and permanent staff. What we do have is in the order of 120...
410 to
415. That's contract and permanent. What we also have that flows through IDT is program-specific staff who are funded by the government programs that we're working on. And the number of people there vary depending on the nature of the programs, but it's currently around about 120 people. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Because I think most of the time you benchmark yourself with the other institution of your similar size. Mm-hmm. But what is the percentage of the salaries in the other institution? My concern is that you are developmental. You are focusing on service delivery,
mm-hmm.
which means to say that a lot of money that goes there little goes to service delivery, but most of it goes to, it's only the Department of Education that I know that have got high percentage because they really, their type of work is not similar with other departments. But this one that goes on the ground really to have 55%. And what informs that percentage to you? Is there any guide? Maybe you can tell us. I'm saying that because at a local government level, they say they must reduce it. It was 32% the maximum, but now they are saying they must go down because most of the budget must go to service delivery. I know that it's operational budget, but if you budget more on the operational, it means to say that what will go on the capital budget is going to reduce because the operational is high because of salaries. Thanks.
Honourable Chair, let me try and unpack that as well. If we look at the current year, how let me go back to 2010 because the honourable members have had chance to look at those numbers. Our delivery on programs came to 1.629 billion rand. Our overhead costs, the overhead component that relates to the running of IDT, amounted to 350 odd million rand. Of that, salaries was approximately 55%. I think one's got to look at the overall delivery and not purely focus on the IDT's operational costs. The operational costs would have come to 350 million. That would include the operating of the offices, the payment of direct salaries, but it would have no impact, in fact, from IDT's side on the development payments other than the development initiatives which were funded directly by IDT, which for that year came to approximately 50 million rand. Thank you.
Honorable Gayla? It is a follow-up.
Okay.
The programs pay sometimes those people. How does the program pay back if it is not part of what they budgeted for? If you can unpack that one.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Member, when I talk about program salaries, that would be specific individuals employed to run a particular program in the region. Their salary would be funded from those program funds by the department that we're working as an agent for. I don't know if that answers the question.
Honorable Gayla.
Fortunately, some of these things we know. IDT received 2 billion in 1990. Now, what happens is that IDT implements program on behalf before it used to implement projects on behalf of Department of Education, which are schools. Now, basically, education gives them money to do the projects. They don't manage the projects. It is consultants who manage the projects. Am I right or wrong? You don't manage them. You employ consultants to manage the projects, and in turn, you manage those monies. That's what you do. That's as simple as that. It is consultants. You outsource your projects, your schools, to consultants. So these high salaries, it's just a matter of managing those consultants. That is the bottom, and seeing that people are skilled and all that. It just does not make sense. Before, Africon used to run these schools. And Africon used to be consultants. So the government then used not to pay much more, they used to pay the same consultant. That is the bottom line. There's not much that you do. You simply manage consultants. You don't manage the school. It is the consultants who manage those schools. But you use your funds to pay your staff, not government funds.
Honorable Chair, I wouldn't want to argue with Honorable Member.
You agree with him?
No, I don't. I don't agree in the sense that, as the question was asked by the Honorable Member, let's use an example of a school. The Department of Education in the Eastern Cape would ask the IDT to implement a project for them, let's say a school in Libode. And then they would say to us, they've got 20 million for the school. And then we enter into an agreement with the department. The department, if they were implementing the school themselves, they would have appointed, I'm just thinking of a consultant, Africon. And Africon would have got quantity surveyors, engineers, and so on and so on. It is the same principle when we're given 20 million. Within that 20 million, that they give us, there is an understanding that there is a need for quantity surveyors, engineers, and a construction company to do the actual construction. At the IDT, we would have our own engineer, like the member, honorable member is saying, to make sure that we deliver on the expectation of our client, Department of Education, in that particular province. Where to say that we're doing nothing, this is where I'm saying, if the Honorable Chair will allow me, I will not argue with the Honorable Member, because it's not a true reflection of how the IDT operates. We would have, for instance, Stephen, who is one of the engineers that we have. It is critical that Africon needs to be managed to ensure, because even if that budget was lying in Bishop, there would have been a Stephen who is an engineer who is managing Africon. It's the same thing, Honorable Chair, that is happening at the IDT.
Chairperson, take it in this spirit.
Yes, ma'am.
That you are not arguing or debating with him.
Yes.
We are clarifying.
Yes,
if you can take it in that spirit.
Yeah. Yes. No. Hence, I'm saying I'm at the most humble in explaining.
You are clarifying.
What we have. The Honorable Member
had asked a very important question to say the salaries that we pay, if we get 2 billion, like not the previous 2 billion, but let's say we were saying last year, I think we were having a turnover of about 4 billion. That is the money that the different government departments were giving us to implement. Half of the people who work on the project are IDT people, and we pay those salaries. We don't take money from the department to pay those salaries. But it would be certain specific things that are program related, like for instance, if the project has said we need to employ X number of people for construction, those would be paid out of the project money itself. But we have a cadre of IDT employees who are at IDT who are working on projects that we pay out of this PES that was given to us a couple of years ago, which we have been using over the years. I don't know whether I've tried to clarify that. And a question was also asked, Honorable Chair, that what guides this percentage of 55% that he has mentioned? The 55% who are the people at the IDT who are sitting at the different regional offices that we have? And he has indicated, without repeating him, to say, basically we sell skill. The skill that we use to be implementing these projects that government is expecting, has asked us or has requested as per the extension, like the chair was saying, that we are an extension of government to implement the different projects that we have. And another, okay, I don't know whether, I don't want to jump into other questions. Well,
but if they're an extension, why don't you benchmark the salaries with, because you are, if you're an extension, you're sort of part of them, of government. That's where the problem is. You understand?
Yes,
you are an extension of government. But when benchmarking your salaries, you go outside. Meanwhile, you're taking yourself to be an extension of government. And you should be benchmarking yourself with the highest pay official of government. I don't understand. That's, maybe it's just because I'm just an ordinary woman, you know, trying to understand some of these things.
Honorable Chair, I don't seek to try and answer that last question of yours. I don't have that. What I would like to do, if I'm given a chance, is just to look at the differentiation between the IDT and the likes of an AFRICON. I think the critical thing is that IDT, operating in the regions, seeks to promote local material sourcing and local labor. It seeks to do social facilitation, which in general the likes of an AFRICON would not do. They would move in with materials, with labor, they would build, they would hand over the keys, and they would leave. And the other thing is that we use our own procurement system, which is based on government procurement, but we believe is more streamlined, and we believe that we are more efficient to the departments.
Can we? Okay.
I think the question, Chairperson, is what you're asking, why are you not benchmarking? Why is your salary so high? That is the main problem, really, is why are your salaries, so high? Why did you go and benchmark with SAA and TBSA and all that? I think that is a question, really, if we can clarify that, you know. That's our major problem, you know. Not what you're doing, it's the salaries that you're paying. And worst of all, within your CEO, you've got an executive within the CEO, which means within that office, you're paying close to 6 million. So that is, if you can clear from that, or we can solve that, or whichever.
Honorable members, Honorable Ngwenya,
Chairperson, I think it's good because we've got the chairperson of the board with us, and I think they've noted the concern with regards to what members have raised. They have to go back and sit down and discuss this matter. I think when we meet next time, we'll get clear answers, and also maybe they will tell us which decisions have they taken with regards to the salary of the CEO. because I don't think that we will resolve this matter, but let us just give the board an assignment to go and relook at the matter. Mm-hmm. Then they will give us a progress report.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'll take that.
I want to support her to say that let us give the chair of the board and the board members to look at it and then come up. Because we know that always when the board takes a decision, sometimes they are being advised. Maybe what we have raised here did not come up when they were dealing with this particular issue. Maybe now they can revisit it.
Can you talk about cell phones?
How do they take it forward? Mm. Yeah, because really, as a board chair, we have to register.
Is it cell phone that is ringing, leader?
No, chair, we want to register that really we are not really comfortable with these high salaries, because it's not that we are throwing stones at us and them, but we want, when we are being asked as a portfolio committee, just have an understanding. But if ourselves, we are not comfortable, it's very difficult to really also defend them. So I support my colleague to say that let's give them a chance to go and look at it, make also what the chairperson was raising to say that the DG is here, how much do they get? And they not the extension of us here as government, if now they are going to get like a private sector sort of. And also even the issue of the 55% salaries, to me, as a percentage, I'm not comfortable, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, for you to be clarified on some of the issues that you are raising, go and get yourself a copy of City Press. I analysed all those salaries there with faces next to the package. If it's Catherine Mabuza, it will be Catherine Mabuza's face and the package and all that. And to me, it wasn't, you know. Maybe I might compromise with 1 comma something, but with 3 comma something, really, I don't know. Over to you, and we close this. Yes, ma'am.
The last one. Well, actually, as the portfolio committee, we thought there would be uniformity with the other entities that report to Public Works.
That one, Honourable Member, I consulted with Treasury. It's our own fault of uniformity. We don't have guidelines on this issue. And that's why I didn't touch it. But can we be clarified? Can you sum up, Mama, and we call them back and we deal with the mud school?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and members. As part of my summing up, it is also important for me, Honorable Chair, to be very clear on the question and the expectation of the committee, so that when I go back home and we engage on these matters with my colleagues, we're very clear on what is the expectation of the committee. You know, we shouldn't seek what the committee is expecting.
I think we need to summarize it in this way, and the committee members will help. I said, are you SIDT, not an extension of government? And if you are an extension of, and of which you said yes, that's where the whole thing is. You said yes. And I said, if you are an extension of government, why do you go out and benchmark yourself with private sectors? Meanwhile, as an extension of government, why don't you have the same package as the DGs of the departments if you are an extension of government? And of which, Mama, you said, yes, we are. Dr. Madlopa?
I think when the chair goes back, it's clear that you are not comfortable about these high salaries. That is clear. It needs to be revisited. Maybe because there are labor laws in this country, you can't just go and say you cut the salary for an individual. Mm-hmm. But there is a provision to say that you don't give the increase
so until the other level, you know, it's there, because it's not easy now, you know, the labor laws will not allow that to take the benefits of a person, but you can have something to wait to say no increment, nothing, you know, because there are these challenges. And then you go out as a chair of the board to say that. I think it's something that will give you the board to say that they have revisited. You can take up, like, to say that the gaps in South Africa, you know, salary gaps, not to say that, and then you cover this thing very well. Yeah, that is our expectation, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Can we call them back so that we get presentation on the math school? Mama? No, she said to us she wants to understand. Yeah, so we were making her to understand the good she's sitting. Auntie Mom? Yeah, Mom. CEO, welcome, and our apology. Our cultures don't really allow us to discuss some of the issues, especially when we are discussing around your salaries in your presence. It's not human. So our apology. Can we now get a presentation on the math schools?
Chairperson, thank you. Chair, we had an opportunity to accompany the Public Works team on the 1st of March, at which date we made a comprehensive presentation on the MART schools. We have reattached the report we presented to the committee on that day, and had noted two questions that the committee had raised. One question related to the specific areas where projects are that are implemented by the organization. We have, in response to that question, attached a list on the backs that have been distributed to the honorable members. The one list provides the areas where the 12 schools, 10 in Eastern Cape, 2 in Northwest, are, where we reported that we were piloting the alternative construction methodologies under the auspices of a DPW, National Department funded program, to the tune of 110 million. That report is that list of schools with the scope is in the pack after the IDT report on math school, which again is the same report we have taken the committee through. We have also attached a list of schools for the last 2 years that we've constructed in the many areas across the country. And that list as well is in the back, Chair. There was also a question with regard to the Eastern Cape. When we came, we reported that we still were challenged on the matter of paying service providers within the required 30 days. And we indicated that we were particularly challenged in the Eastern Cape province as a result of the budget deficits that we experienced in that province. We reported that in that province, there were outstanding transfers to the tune of about 40 million to the IDT, which had a negative impact on our ability to pay service providers. Chair, we are pleased to report that there's been a progress in that regard, and that since the beginning of this year, engagement has been continuing with the Eastern Cape Department of Education, and that we now sit at a point where they have approved and taken decision to avail the required resources with regards to all the outstanding transfers. Unfortunately, we have not necessarily seen the flow of funding, and we are expecting a significant flow of funding even as we sit here on this week, which would begin to resolve some of the outstanding payments. So in that regard, we want to report a progress, but we also want to say that the matter is not fully resolved, because we'll consider it fully resolved when we have the funding in our hands to pay the outstanding service providers. That matter is linked with an earlier question that was raised with regard to legal fees that are incurred by the IDT. Unfortunately, instances of this nature result in a lot of pressure towards the IDT from the service providers, who would take us to the court of law demanding their payments. A case in point is the Grenega LTA in the Eastern Cape, who had served us a letter of demand as a result of outstanding fees to them. We also believe that the resolution of the matter by the Eastern Cape this week will also resolve the Grenega matter. So I want to stop there and to respond to questions. A point of emphasis, Chair, because we had taken the committee through the same report, we did not think it's wise to redo that, but to respond to the questions that were raised. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, anything from the presentation?
Chairperson, you know, I asked a question earlier on and it was not responded to.
What was the question, Honourable Member? I thought I would bring
yes, thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair, the question asked by the Honourable Member was the on rural development and the number of the jobs that are created on that.
Chairperson, thank you. So as one of our strategic targets, developmental targets as an organization, we've got a job creation target. At a corporate level, that target ranges between 35,000 and 40,000 jobs opportunities. Over and above that, under the EPWP, we are the implementing agent for the non-state sector. And with regards to that specific program, we have a target of delivering 12,000 opportunities on a per-year basis, increasing as we proceed with additional budget provided for the program. You could therefore say on an annual basis as an organization, we have a job creation target of about 50,000 job opportunities. These largely are in the deep rural areas of the country, because this is where the bulk of our programs with relation to schools and other facilities, including social development programs, are, as well as EPWP. We have acted as an implementing agent for the Department of Rural Development, and under that program created a number of jobs, I would think around 5,000 jobs in the programs that we've done specifically for the department. So in a sense, the target that we pursue for job is fed in through by the various programs that we undertake as an organization. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the responses on the questions that we raised at the committee. I'm laughing here because I've not documented that I have written something, so now I will speak from my mind. But I want to check, you know, the report I think the report written 30th January 2011, they are indicating the job opportunities in every project that they have indicated when I was reading it.
There was also indication of 2,100 and something jobs that were created on a certain project. But I think it's assisting for the colleague to check to say, and now where are we at the moment, because it was January at that time when the report was written. But I want to check, Chair, on, I don't know, this report. On the report of the 30th, they indicated the schools, and then we requested that we request the list of the schools. But I have noticed there are inconsistencies around the issue of the presentation of the report. When you look at the schools that are being broken down to indicate where the project is, we appreciate that. And the others are indicating even the area to say like Potchefstroom, Vryheid, so that we as a committee, we can track those particular schools where it's being seen. But in the other areas, just the name of a school, you know. Some of the schools have got same names at some stage. But if you can indicate the town or the city where it is, it assists. But you have done that in your report. But in the others, it's not done. It's just the name. So we are encouraging as a committee that if you can also put it, it's like a St. Faith primary school. You indicated in brackets that it's in Potchefstroom. So it assists us as a committee to trace that particular school. But also, Chair, when I was reading that report for the 30th of January, I was looking page 3 of 24 vis-a-vis page 4 of 24. Let me just read. It was saying that in Northern Cape and Free State, no programs were implemented by the Department of Education during 2008, 2009, and 2009, 2010, and none are planned currently for 2010-2011. That is a statement that is on the report. But when you go on 4 of 24, it is saying the first paragraph and the second, it says, projects have reached final handover stage with final accounts completed and final payment processes are in progress. 7 projects in Northern Cape are completing final snacks to achieve practical completion stage. To me, it's like contradicting statements, because it started by to say there is nothing that is taking place in that particular province. And then it goes on and say in the Northern Cape, the 3 projects that have been on hold following termination of the contract will now be re-tendered. But on the other side, they said there is nothing even that is budgeted for in that particular. Can it be clarified, that contradicting statement, to us? And also that there is a spending patterns, expenditure patterns in different provinces. I will also quote the one in KZN. It talks about 24 projects in total. I don't know where is this thing now. Chair, you studying. It talks about 24 projects. Oh, yeah. 24 projects, and in the other provinces also there was a table that is indicating a different, like Western Cape showing one school. But if you look at the total amount that is spent in one school in Western Cape, is different from Eastern Cape as well as in other provinces. And I always say that I come from deep rural areas. Always when I talk because I represent those working class and the poor where I come from, really. But if the budget for one school is I don't know what page is, oh no, there it is, yeah. One school you in Western Cape will cost 22 million. One school. To me, seemingly, it's like the school just depends in which area is the school, you know, and then it will be looked along those lines, not the quality of the school for our young kids, irrespective of where they come from. Can we be clarified what is the approach and criteria used to to allocate monies in different areas, because sometimes you find, I know that it's much schools, and then the schools that are have got a challenge in their structures. And also on the page 12 of 24, there was an indication to say that in some of the schools, I don't know where they are, because it's only the name. That's what I was requesting, that if the city of that particular place or the township, it will assist. There was supposed to be an appointment of the contractors to deal with that in January. But when you look at this report, I don't see the progress report around this one to say that what is it that has happened. Were they appointed, because they were saying appointed expected January 11, 2011, something of that sort. That's why I also talked, Chair, about the issue of the performance contract for the staff or whoever that is being appointed. Because when we look at this report, also we'll mirror ourselves, you know, we'll dashboard to where we are heading to look at it. This is what is a contract. This is what against the report that is presented before us. Chair, I will stop there because I've lost my page. I'm just talking now on something. But these contradictions, can they be explained to us?
A follow-up on the building of schools. Can you clarify the costing of building one school in a province? And don't you have a basic plan? Because I know that out of the state-of-the-art schools, but the one that she is referring to in the Western Cape is a primary school. What type of school is it that can cost $22 million? And from Klepmat, if my memory serves me, that school costs about $22 million, and it's a primary school.
Chairperson, just to add on that, maybe we also need to be informed, how many emerging contractors do we have now as a result of these building of schools and stuff and their CIDB gradings? Thank you.
Can I give Ndate Gaila a chance?
No, it's just two issues. It seems you're getting on top of the late payment of contractors and consultants. Do you know when can that be finalized? You know that it's Department of Education, Eastern Cape, that hasn't been paying the money. You are actually not to be paying. But when can that be finalized, and will they be paid with interest? Secondly, about the different type of schools, I think the chairperson of the board, the problem there really is that leaving everything to consultants to design schools. If you go to the Eastern Cape, you get different designs and different prices. You know? So government schools should be standard design. And I think you, one way or the other, you have to get on top of that one, that you don't have different designs, because some of those designs are very costly and unnecessary costly. So if you can just look into that. Thank you.
Honorable Mayamavila.
My question is, the first one is based on the center.
Mike on system. My first question is based on the expenditure trend, as my colleague has indicated, because it's already confusing. For instance, in KZN, 24 schools were built at the cost of $250 million. In Mpumalanga, 19 schools were built at the cost of $65 million.
Mm-hmm.
And in Northern Cape, in Northwest, 18 schools were built at the cost of $148 million. Maybe can we just get an indication what makes these differences? Because maybe we don't, we're not aware of the specification with regards to those schools. The second one, Chair, is the inconsistency in the report. As I've indicated before, that in some of the schools that have been mentioned, the attachments of the schools
I will talk about Mpumalanga because I'm coming from Mpumalanga. And Mpumalanga, there's no scope of work that has been indicated there. So only the name of the school, the name of the municipality, and also the amount. Why, when looking at other provinces, it's clear because there's the name of a school, the location, the budget, and also under comments, that is where you get the scope of work that has been done with regards to the cost attached to that particular school. So can they assist us in providing us with that additional information so that during our constituency period we can be able to manage our oversight in those schools that have been mentioned here. Thank you.
No, I found this thing I wanted to check here because my understanding is that the client department forwarded the need analysis to the Department of Public Works, including IDT, because they are going to work on it. But the reason for the Free State and the Northern Cape, the challenge of them not doing the work, the reason was that decisions from the client are awaited for up to 6 months on land purchase and project scope changes that are negatively affecting the progress of 9 projects. Can they submit a need analysis before they have a land where the school is going to be built? These are the things that are are not clear. To say that when they submit it, can they say that you are going to build school without indicating the land? Because now it's like they are waiting for the land to be purchased again after they have already given the need analysis. And also I will say page, that one, it was a page 2 of 24 for the officials to look at it. And also the issue of the number of people employed, page 19 of 24. It's just a humble request, because if we want to know exactly how many people have been employed, but if the report will say included in Department of Education funded project report and it's indicating 0 to us, we want that thing that has been reported there to be part of here so that we know exactly that how many people have been employed, not to be referred in the other report in the other department that is not with us here. And also on the conclusion, Chair, on page 23 of 24.
Are you able to capture whatever that? Okay.
Okay. On page 23 of 24, can this sentence be unpacked? The last one. The conclusion of a multi-year cooperation agreement with Department of Public Works reinforced by the Department of Public Works drive to reclaim its mandate would go a long way in institutionalizing early planning and specific delivery. What does that sentence mean? I'm just asking whether everything is okay according to this one. Now we are no more going to experience program in the future because of this reclaim of the mandate back, so that in future when we ask questions, we know that this thing is resolved now. We are no more going to have a challenge. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Madlopa. Under KwaZulu-Natal, of the 60 million allocated to KwaZulu-Natal for the year 2008-2009, 34.9 million was spent. What happened to about 36 million that was not spent? And then on 3.3, on under IDT engagement, under expenditure 2008-2010, how much did you spend? Because that chart, that table is not clear. How much did you spend? And can you also give us the size of the school and the cost? And be specific to say how many schools have you built, and also indicate
the initial budget. It's not very clear. What one that I'm going to 3.1, yeah, I mean 3.3, table 3. In the old document, it's very clear. And then Andam Pumalanga. Oh, Aubun. It's page 2 of 24. In the document, Mama. We wanted that. And then under Mpumalanga, ne? That's page 8 on that other colored document. There are so many documents, that's why I said at the beginning. The Mzeleni Primary School, there's a list of schools there. Projects were put on hold pending the Department of Basic Education securing the purchase of land or right to use of land. What are the latest developments in this regard? There are a list of schools there. Are we done? Honorable members, can they respond to the questions? That's it. Please.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Sir, I've noted all the questions, and I'll start from the first to the last. Thank you to the members for the questions. Sir, the first question was clarity on the Northern Cape and Free State. I think it related to information provided on page 3 of the...
Can I clarify something? The bathrooms, you go straight, and then you will stand. Okay, fine. Okay, continue.
Yeah. It related, Chair, to what may look like an inconsistency, Chair, with regard to whether there has been a program implemented in Northern Cape vis-a-vis in Northern Cape and Free State. Chair, there is actually no inconsistency, Chair. If you look at the bottom of page 3 on the document, the heading changes. It says IDT funded program 150 million. The earlier heading, which the honorable member had pointed on, is reflected on page 2, is treasury funded program, the 2.7 billion. So, in other words, the report is indicating that under the treasury funded 2.7 billion program, there were no schools in the Northern Cape and in the Free State that the IDT was implementing. However, under the IDT-funded program of 150 million, which is the resources that the organization availed to initiate the program in 2008 and 2009, there was work that was done as reflected in page 4 of the report. If I then move to the second question, the cost of the Western Cape school versus other schools, I think that is also related to a question which was raised about expenditure trends in KZN, Mpumalanga, and other provinces. Later, after this, I'll deal with the question of the cost per school. Chair, these are not necessarily all schools that have been built. In certain instances, it is renovations. In certain instances, it is upgrades. In certain instances, it is indeed schools building, which is why you can find for 30 million, 20 schools done, and in certain instances, for 22 million, one school done. Because it depends on the nature of work that we were commissioned to do at a school. But most importantly, Chair, is the fact that we do not allocate as IDT resources on schools. the province decides that these are the schools that we will either renovate, upgrade, or build in a particular year. They would then engage us to assist them in establishing the cost of what needs to be done. They would have established the scope in terms of what needs to be done, but we would need to cost that scope. And they would need to take those estimated costs and avail the necessary budgets. So we may do more work in Mpumalanga or in KZN than we may in compared to the other province, depending on the extent to which we've been engaged by that province. I think this is an important question. Historically, we've done more work in the Eastern Cape and KZN in the schools program, more so because those provinces, I want to believe, had the largest backlog, but also had the realization that they needed support in the implementation, in their implementation capacity, and engaged the IDT. Linked to this question was a question raised about the Northern Cape when we came earlier on, I believe, with Public Works or on the 9th of November. Why are we doing less in Northern Cape? We have done less in Northern Cape over the years because the provincial department was of the view that they have the necessary capacity to roll out their social infrastructure. And therefore, the engagement of the IDT was very limited. However, in the recent times, we've been engaged by the province. They have asked us to support them in a program of schools building to the tune of 220 million for the financial year 2011 and 2012. And we are in engagement with them, and we hope that that program portfolio will increase with other support provision to other departments like health. So in a sense, we work in provinces, in all provinces we want to work, but the extent to which we work in provinces depends on the extent to which a given province wants to utilize our services. The question of the school in Cape Town, there are schools that are called comprehensive schools, where it would not only be the classrooms, it will be IT facilities, science facilities, admin blocks, ablution facilities, in certain instances, sports fields, kitchens, and where we build such schools, the cost would usually be high. The question as to what is the standard cost of a school, a small school would cost around $5 million. A medium school, around $15 million, and a big school around 25 to 30 million. A big school would be a typical 1,000 learner school with anything between 22 to 28 classrooms. The cost of a classroom can be presented in two ways. If you're looking at just a classroom, the cost would be around 240,000. We've worked that on the basis of a 60 square meter classroom at a cost of 4,000 rands per square meter. That would cost around 240,000. However, Chair, the basis which has been used largely to determine the cost of a classroom is the basis of the total school. The total school, including site works, first let me indicate that when you work it on the basis of the total school, it would rise to about 1.1 million per classroom. Now, this is where you've got, you are including site works, which usually takes a significant amount of money. That refers to the land preparation. This is where you're including ablution facilities, sick bays or sick rooms, administration blocks, IT labs, science labs, kitchens. If you include all of those things, sports fields in certain instances, fencing, then you may build a school for 15 million which caters, let me say, for 600 learners. Now, if you take that school, you divide it by the number of classes, maybe 15 classes that have been constructed, then your cost per classroom would be seemingly high. But in actual fact, it's around 240,000 if you were to just take one classroom. The other question, Chair, related to the Northwest School's appointment in page 12 of the report. Chair, progress has been made in the Northwest schools. All of those schools, contractors have actually, that whole tendering process has been completed. Contractors have been appointed. Site handovers have been undertaken, and work is beginning to happen on those schools. So that work has happened in the intervening period between the date of this report and today. The next question related to late payment of contractors. When will the Eastern Cape matter be resolved? So as we're sitting here, we actually received a report that Friday funds were transferred by the Eastern Cape. We would know because some of these electronic payment systems take a lead period of a day or two before the funding shows into our account. We would know today whether those resources have indeed been paid, and that would make a big difference because we'll be able to pay a number of contractors immediately. I must say, the reported progress was to the fact that the province had agreed to pay, and the province had committed to find the money and started the process of effecting the necessary payment. But we will only rejoice once we confirm that the funding is in our account. Yes, in such instances, interest applies. The unfortunate matter with regard to interest is that the emerging contractors are not courageous enough to charge interest because they fear that it may present them at a bad light and affect their chances of getting future work. So often it's your guys like Greenacres that would charge interest. And indeed, this is a significant cost to government with regard to those that would charge it. But unfortunately, a number of them wouldn't charge it. With regards to the matter of standard designs, we have developed what we call guidelines for a model school design. And this is our attempt to influence our clientele with regard to consideration of, you know, this concept of standard design. I think the Honorable Member is very true that sometimes architects play, you know, explore their innovation at the cost of government. However, this is a matter that is largely client-driven. We do have influences. We engage with our client, but it is usually our clients who decide on what kind of school that they want. And would need to implement their will. But through the initiative of developing guidelines, we're beginning to influence them. The other question was the outstanding scope of work. I think we've noted that on the report. I think it is an oversight. There's a few schools there where there's the school and everything, but the scope of work is missing. The land issue, I think, in Mpumalanga has not been resolved. There are certain instances where maybe let me present this in two ways. When we had undertaken the IDT-funded intervention, there were instances where there were delays by the provinces in confirming the schools. I think you may know, Chair, that government struggles with dealing with external resources. Whether it's donor funding or whether it's a program like this, where an external party comes with resources and says, what is it that we can do? The decision-making with regard to pointing the fund as to where to invest usually becomes elongated, different from when the planning has been initiated from the government itself. So in this instance, where as the IDT we invested 150 million, we experienced, I think, undue delays where many of the provincial departments struggled to point us to say these are the schools that you must work at. I would imagine, Chair, it's partly because it's a political matter to take development to people, and when the politicians were given the opportunity to take the development, the decision as to where to take that development was not a simple matter, we would imagine. Also, in Mpumalanga, we are awaiting budget confirmation on a number of schools in order to kick off some of their programs. The number of people employed, till we usually provide this number. I've noted that in certain tables that may be missing, but generally on our corporate plan, we've got a target for a number of jobs, and we report on this whenever we come to the committee. So we will keep on doing that. The multi-year cooperation with Public Works. The former minister, Minister George, spearheaded a process of concluding agreements with provincial DPWs that would facilitate a smooth working relationship with the IDT. Unfortunately, sir, in the kind of work that we do, sometimes we clash with our mother body, where the provincial public works consider us as a competition. And this protocol was an attempt by the minister to say this is our entity. This is the protocol which must be used in working with our entity. That public works, instead of you waiting for your clients to be so displeased with you that they have to go elsewhere, why don't you work with your entity and say to your clientele, in my struggle to deliver, I have brought in one of my own who will assist me in delivering. I will allocate 30% on an annual basis to them in your program so that I can deliver to you. Now, they are often failure to do that would result in client departments coming directly to us. Because we are established as an independent agency, accounting through public work, but to support government, we are unable to say no when a government department asks for help. So this protocol sought to address that. It would also resolve issues of early planning, because then we would plan with public works and begin to secure delivery much better than currently under the environment of better planning. This protocol was signed by a number of provinces, but not by all provinces, and it's partially working. It's partially working in provinces like Mpumalanga. The Department of Public Works has embraced us and is spearheading us, supporting them in them servicing their clients. In certain provinces, it is not as working as it should, and it then allows the gap for client departments to come directly to us. I'm almost there, Chair. The question of the shortfall spend in KZN, this was a rollover. What tends to happen, which is an unfortunate matter, is that provinces would even appoint us in November. This is now 4 months before the end of the financial year, for funding for the current year. Now, in such instances, rollovers are inevitable because we meant to have a year to implement the program. So whilst we may reflect resources as for a given financial year, they are not always received at the beginning of the financial year, which is why they would be rollovers in such instances. The last question I have, Chair, was, I've responded to it, the question of projects put on hold regarding the land. I think I've responded to all of them. If I may have missed one, I would be pleased to respond to it.
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, there has been an experience that shows that in some cases, one contractor is given a lot of work, which caused delay in the finalization or completion of work. Can I check how is the IDT spreading work to different contractors? That is one. Two, on the challenges that also you have just indicated, to say that sometimes the client department dump funds, you know, towards the end of financial year. It's a challenge that can make us not meet our target. I want to check on in one of your reports, what page is this? There is no page, but you have indicated, you have given us the heading says the National Department of Education accelerated schools infrastructure delivery, 3.4 of the document initiative. But you have indicated that your target for 2014 is to complete 2,350 schools. You are talking about the MAT schools as well as inappropriate school structures. Is it a real target, that one? If on the other slide you were talking about 214 projects that were not completed, all of them, you indicated the MAT schools, your target to say 214, but you did not really complete those ones. And also to check, you indicated 67 schools. It was on the medium expenditure term framework. You indicated that 67 schools, because it's 2008 to 2010. It was the whole METF that we are going to complete 67. But now the target from now to 2014 is 2,350. Is it real? Can we be assured that we are going to achieve that target? And also, you indicated Western Cape that it's one school, but also the expenditure in the METF, you only spend 1.6 million, which when you round up, it's 2 million, according to your report here. But the budget was 22 million. That expenditure that you have incurred now, is the school complete? Is everything fine now? Because you budgeted until 2010, 2011 for one school. If it takes for one school so long, 2,350, what does it indicate? Thank you.
Honorable Gayla?
Just a small one. What I would like to find out, have you developed a maintenance plan? Because basically, you've done some wonderful work, but by the time you, in 5 years' time, you need to go back and maintain those schools, and that is really the problem within government, is that the schools are not being maintained. As IDT, have you or do you intend to develop a maintenance plan? Because that is what is actually needed, is a proper maintenance plan of the school. Thank you.
I raised the issue of 60 million in KwaZulu-Natal. To say out of that 60 million, you managed to spend 34.9 million. And I wanted to know what happened to the rest of the money.
May I respond, sir?
Please, sir.
Sir, thank you. If I start with the last chapter. Those funds were rolled over and were spent in that province. We've done lately, I think in the financial year 2009 and 10 and 11, more work in KZN more than any other province. So that money was not lost, and it was spent in the schools program. The other question related to the spread of work to different contractors. Just by the way we work, we facilitate a good spread among contractors. Firstly, we have a decentralized system, which ensures that we appoint contractors from the relevant areas. In other words, we've got, whilst our system is integrated, but the Western Cape, Western Cape, KZN, et cetera, would drive the procurement with central adjudication sitting at head office, but the inputs will be coming from the provinces. Because we've been involved in this for over 12 years, we look at the spread of the work we give contractors, because indeed it bites us. If we've overloaded one contractor, we've seen over the years that that contractor would fail to deliver, and that would affect us. So whenever we allocate work, we take cognizance of that. The challenge of dumping of funds has not been a significant problem over the years. What has been a significant problem, Chair, is what I would refer to as the late transfer funding. If funds, for example, are transferred in July, August, September, October, already we are late in spending. And already we compromise that which could be spent in that financial year. Dumping, I would loosely define it as when funds are transferred in January, February, March, in the last quarter. And in the past years, we've done very well in managing that risk. I must say, though, Chair, that with the, this is my analysis, Chair, that with the reshuffle, that there are significant pressures to government departments to deliver. And those significant pressures suggest that the new incumbents can hardly wait for things to happen. And as a result, there is a pressure in the public sector for delivery that begins to raise significant questions. Questions like, if the department had indeed failed to deliver over the past 9 months or so, you now have a new leader who wants to see things happening. Are we then saying that the new leader is forbidden to utilize the services of an IDT in order to secure the delivery, which didn't happen, which probably was the reason that the new leader has come into the role? I think these are bigger questions, bigger than ourselves, which I think offices like the Auditor General, National Treasury, and yourselves should assist in responding to. Should we then say no to this leader who says, this is what I've inherited, and I understand that you could help in fast-tracking the delivery? So these are the issues that we're experiencing, especially in the period, you could say, November to February in this current financial year. So while that problem has not been there for a long time, there are new challenges that we're beginning to experience within that context. The target of 2,350 is not an IDT target. We've presented a report that indicates that the initial 2.7 billion MAT school program, which was funded by National Treasury, expires in the financial year 2010-11. To take the fight forward in terms of eradication of inappropriate and MAT structures, government has allocated an additional 8.2 billion over the MTF period 2012 to 2014. But that 8.2 billion has been allocated to the National Department of Education. And these are the targets according to the plan by NDOE that we're bringing for information in the context of the broader fight against the inappropriate structures. In the 2011-12 financial year, the department has budgeted 700 million out of that, and I believe around 2.3 billion in the next financial year, and about 5.3 billion in the outer financial year, to invest not only in MAD schools but also in basic services infrastructure in schools like sanitation, electricity, etc. The Western Cape, we built a bigger school, you could say, in around at most 12 months. That's how it would take us to build a comprehensive school costing about 22 to 30 million. We would not build a school over years. The small schools can be done anything between 4 to 8 months. However, in the Western Cape, it's a joint venture between us and the provincial department. On the original 150 IDT funded program, an allocation of 5 million was made to the Western Cape. It took us a very long time for the province first to decide which school we will do, but also to decide how the program will be configured. Eventually, the decision was that they will join venture with us on a 22 million school. So our 5 million would be a contribution on a 22 million school. We therefore could only start when they had the necessary budget to do the school. Work in the school started last year around June, not earlier on, which is why the school is still in construction. The last question related to the maintenance plan, sir. We wish we could have that power to, as an organization, because indeed this is a big problem, not only in schools, but generally in the public sector infrastructure. Unfortunately, we don't. But power, authority is one thing, influence is the other. As an entity that works with government, we have an opportunity to influence government to look at maintenance issues. And as we engage with public works, these are the issues that we raise. And as their entity, we're also looking at our own capacities and how best can we support them in the areas where we pick challenges. But in essence, this is the terrain for the public works department. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to add, Chair, on the maintenance one, and to indicate that there is an act of law that has recently been passed in terms of Giyama. And I think that act of law is going to take care of some of those issues. Because one of the things that it really outlines is the consolidation of the maintenance plan and the maintenance budget into public work. Hence, for us, it becomes very critical that whilst we work with line function departments, it is very important that a public work still plays its role, particularly given this particular issue on maintenance. Chair, I also wanted to add on the issue of financial dumping. As my colleague had said, that each case that we work on is really assessed on its merit. And maybe just to take the honorable members back a bit to say that in 1997, when the mandate of the IDT was reviewed, when there was that commission that reviewed the mandate of the IDT, it clearly stated that the IDT will implement programs or projects that are commissioned by government. And I think that is a very critical element, because it went further to say there is no specific department that the IDT will service, but the mandate of the IDT is going to cut across, which means that while the IDT is not necessarily part of the of government per se, the IDT is an implementing agent that services government. And therefore, when there are certain requests that relate to fast-tracking of implementation in line with our mandate, the IDT, to a great extent, is obliged to take those assignments and roll out, particularly because one of the performance indicators for the IDT is the turnaround time, the shorter turnaround time in fast-tracking service delivery. So for each of the requests that we get it's in the middle of the financial year. We assess it with its own merits. My colleague has already indicated that, for instance, with the change of executives, we found that the review of the new executives in terms of where backlogs are, there has been a trend of an increase in terms of them requesting us to fast-track those programs. So I thought that from a mandate point of view and where the IDT is located in the governance structure, it then becomes important for the committee in locating this particular element that the IDT is an implementing agent of government that is supposed to be fast-tracking and intervening where government is unable to come in. And therefore, the late allocation of funding becomes part of the mandate of the IDT. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. CEO, we are in the process of amending the AMA. So there will be changes on the AMA. Honourable members, I think are there still any questions? Honourable Ngwanyamari, let me first give Mama Gal, and then you'll follow Ngwanyamari.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was also about to ask about the Kiyama Act when the CEO says that currently, because it was passed in 2007. Hmm? Anyway, I'm having a concern here about the one of the challenges which is faced by IDT, that of the capacity of emerging contractors, that they are to put more hands on supporting them and on delivery institutional arrangement. What is going on? That would mean that they employ consultants for them to be able to put more effort on the lack of capacity on these emerging contractors, because now it seems that they are still having a problem in them, the emerging companies. Or does it mean that they are to employ more emerging contractors for them to be able to proceed with the work required? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ngana Marina. Chair, the first one is a comment on page 4, the figures there, on this document of the 12th, dated 12th February. And Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. The figures they don't tally, 2008, 2009, 9, 10, 10, and 11, if they can recheck those figures, especially Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. Then the second one, Chair, I think EIDT has highlighted some challenges in the implementation of this smart school program. Challenges such as the allocation of funding directly to the Department of Education that makes it difficult for the National or Provincial Department of Public Works to account. That there are no clear roles and responsibilities between the department, the National Department of Education and Public Works, and that the program lacks central coordination. Are there any plans to deal with this challenges? Because if those challenges mentioned, as mentioned, they are not dealt with, they will hinder the implementation of this program.
Thank you. Honorable Nguyen.
Thanks. Mine also attests to the challenges that IDT is having. I just wanted to check if they will be able to meet the Millennium Development Goals in 2014.
Who's going to respond or comment?
I will on some, and I think my colleague will assist on the MDG one. The emerging contractors, we procure, I would say, way over 80% from emerging contractors by and large in our work. I think we're probably leading. We've not tested this. We're probably leading in this area of utilizing emerging contractors. I think just on the basis of an eye, when you observe the kind of contractors that we procure, especially in the schools program, which is the largest of our programs, these are 99% emerging contractors. Where we would not be able to procure emerging contractors is if we're doing a hospital for 350 million or a court, you know, such huge projects, or a you know, huge project above 50 million where we may struggle to find emerging contractors in the relevant category from a CIDP grading. So when we speak about emerging contractors in our context, it's almost like we're talking about a different category. We have an objective of empowering levels 1 to 5 emerging contractors, and we have a targeted program on women contractors in that program. And this is sometimes where we find challenges, which is why we've instituted the contractor development program, which entails a support program to support these contractors so that when they fail, we do not walk away and say they failed us, but we provide them support in the construction. The challenges of coordination, these challenges were raised at MINMEC, Public Works MINMEC. The minister took note of them. And we believe that she is spearheading their resolution with regard to how they are challenged, because they are at the level of the department in terms of who accounts for the eradication of mud and inappropriate schools program. Thank you, Chair. I think my colleague will help on the other question.
Can I follow up, Chair? On what the Honorable Mandai. No, what we want to gather here.
The Honorable Madlopa, okay.
Madlopa no Madlala. Azali was the latter. No, I wanted to make a follow up to say what we want to gather there is whether by that challenge that you are having for capacity of imaging contractors, does it cost you to hire the consultant again after you have, you know, appointed them to assist them? That's what we want to gather. Or you have got the staff within your institution that assist them, because you raise it as a challenge that is facing you to really fast track service delivery, that sometimes you appoint those contractors and they need more hands-on than normal, you know. What we want to check is whether does it make you hire the consultant after you have appointed them, or you have got a team in your institution that assists them? That's what we want to get us.
Thank you. Over to you.
We have a team under the contractor development program. That team, however, would facilitate interventions. There may be training interventions, whereby, depending on the area of training, we would then hire that specific service to assist those contractors in training. We also would pair them with higher-level grade contractors so that there's mentorship from contractor to contractor. But we have a team that supports them.
Maybe just to add as well, honorable members, to say that, yes, it does cost us money. I think the principle that an affirmative action type of an engagement does cost money and cost time. Sometimes you find that we must build in the elements of capacity building. Sometimes we will need some experts to come and redo certain things that have not been properly done. So I can say that from a principal point of view, sometimes it does, but we do have a team, as my colleague has answered. It really depends on the different type of projects and the type of an intervention that must be put in place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. I'll respond to the Millennium Development Goals question. Our focus has been on the national strategic priorities, which we assume to be government's programmatic response to the MDGs. That the creation of jobs is a and sustainable livelihoods is a programmatic response to MDG 1 to reduce the number of people living in absolute poverty or earning $1 a day. So in addition to the social grants, there's the creation of decent work. I think it pertains to the earlier question that I think the member asked about how many jobs does the IDT intend creating, and according to our corporate plan, it's in there, it's just over, I think it's about 60,000. Hey, it's just over 60,000. Or the improving the quality of education. We have a target with regard to the number of schools in terms of creating the environment. So I think we have linked our targets more clearly to the government program of action, which we assume is the programmatic response to the MDGs.
Thank you, ma'am. Before honourable members, we are left with one presentation. I don't know whether we should take it. IDT transformation. I don't know whether we'll make it or we move it to the next time. Chairperson, next time, for things to be a bit easier to can read and follow up, can we get maybe a table of if a table of schools that are going to be renovated, upgraded, new schools with additional facilities to be provided to the schools, so that we should not be, you know, asking a lot of questions on the amounts that differ from Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Western, because it becomes a perception, would say, why in the Western Cape school is built, why are they paying a 22 million for a primary school, instead of you saying, no, Claymont, 22 million, upgrading, additional facilities, so that you can be able to follow up and cut down a lot of documentation that is there. It will be easy for us to make a follow-up and not I ask unnecessary questions. Honourable members, should we allow them to make a presentation on transformation? Honourable Mwanyimadi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I will propose that we defer the presentation to the next meeting due to time constraints.
Okay. Oscar, I think we've come to the end of our meeting, and I would like to thank you for honoring our invitation. We are here representing the masses, and that's our job, to scrutinize and get down to the real issues that our people would like to know. Thank you very much for coming and for making the presentation, and enjoy the rest of your day. Honorable members, can you please, members of the Portfolio Committee, can you remain behind?